Welcome to day number 4 of our polka dot challenge. I am back. I hope you've had some fun and have some portraits now hanging on your wall of your colleagues. Find out if anyone is a potential Archibald Prize winner like Paul from yesterday. I look forward to seeing those. I've seen a few in the Facebook group, but I look forward to seeing a few more pop up in my feed, please. I love a good portrait. Today's guest is Dr. Christy Goodwin. I met Christy last year. She is a powerhouse of knowledge when it comes to brain science, and I'm a brain science nerd. I love that we live in a time where we have the capacity through technology to almost prove things that we probably, I imagine, people in times gone by assumed. And what Christy is just is a walking encyclopedia of helpful information about how we can live in a way that's congruent with how our bodies and our minds are set up to achieve their best. So another human that if you jump on her website, you will find no end of helpful information about how we can operate in a really high performance way. Christy has a great challenge for us this week, and I could have spoken to her for an hour. I didn't, so don't despair. Keep driving to work. This shouldn't take more than 20 minutes today, but it is a slightly longer chat. Just again, because her knowledge is so helpful. There's so many elements that we could have gone down with the expertise that she has. But in essence, her challenge today is daydreaming. I put it there, that simple. So have a listen, see what you think. I'll chat to you at the end of this about how you're going to do this challenge this week or today or forever and the power of it. But I love that with all of the complicated things, the power of daydreaming is what we're talking about today.
I am with the beautiful Dr. Christy Goodwin. Thank you so much for giving up your Wednesday afternoon for me.
It's a pleasure, Clarissa. Thanks for having me.
I've just noticed too, as we're recording this, that I'm pretty sure you're standing in front of a Maggie McDonald artwork. Yeah. Am I right?
Yeah. Well, one of those random things you purchased during lockdown on Instagram, and you hope that what arrives actually looks like the Instagram photo that you were drooling over. And indeed, it
really is. Yeah. And so I have a really big piece of hers at home that's similar. It must be from the same collection as such.
Fabulous. I met her in person recently, and I did an art class. Let me just say my piece that I produced in her lesson is nowhere to be seen. So
so you just keep buying her work.
Totally.
That's what I do too now. I just buy other people's work. I don't need to try and work this out myself anymore. Anyway, art is not necessarily the reason I have you here, but it is ironically probably one of the themes of some of the things that we're going to talk about today. I first met you last year when you kindly came and spoke at my Happy Lawyer, Happy Life retreat. Your knowledge around neuroscience and brain science and human performance just blows my mind. And when you were speaking, I was there with like notes trying to keep it all. And then I just eventually put my pen down. I was like, I'm just going to get this recording transcribed. This is too hard to keep up with. It was so many useful things. So when I was putting together this challenge, as I said to you when I reached out to you, I just know you sit on so much helpful knowledge. And I wanted to talk with you particularly around obviously lawyers and our behavior and our wellness. Your specialty sits in digital. But I give all of that context and then say to you, do you want to introduce yourself properly rather than the Clarissa rambling of this is how I know her? How would you prefer to be known?
I'm more than happy to do that. And thank you for your very kind words. I said it to you, your conference last year was the highlight of my speaking year. So
that's so cool.
It really was all it was hyped up to be. So I am a peak performance researcher. I have a fascination, some might say an obsession, about the way our brains are designed. How do we optimize our performance and our well-being? And I think there's a symbiotic relationship between the two, pitting them against each other. We're either really productive and our well-being is compromised, or we focus on our well-being and we're not very productive. I don't think that's the case. As I said, there's a strong nexus there. I used to be a teacher and then an academic, and my research initially was around how technology was impacting children and teens' brains. But then as the years went on, I realized that none of us are immune to the digital pull, and that if we're really honest, that technology is having a profound impact on us as adults. And it was an awful accident I had with my son several years ago where I became digitally distracted. He smashed his face, requiring urgent hospitalization. I will declare that he'd done the exact same thing 2 weeks prior when my husband was supervising him to his mother's guilt. But that was a moment in time that was a catalyst for me to say, as adults, we are struggling with the digitally intense world we've now found ourselves in professionally and personally. So in the last 8 years, my research has broadened, and I'm not really looking at kids anymore. I've become obsessed, infatuated with us as adults. How do we certainly use technology? It's not a digital detox, cancel your Netflix subscription message. It's how can we use technology in ways that are congruent with our human operating system, our neurobiology. So, yeah, that's how I fell into this work. And I'm, yeah, really passionate about sharing really pragmatic, realistic solutions. A self-confessed nerd, but I love being conduit. Let me take the research and science translate it in something that is practical and realistic that you can use.
And I love your language there around peak performance and well-being can exist at the same time, because I think that's right. Like, again, if we stereotype in law, peak performance in years gone by, I think, has been associated with unhealthy, what I would describe as unhealthy work habits, lots of hours, rushing fast, you know, sometimes aggressive, like this sense of the stereotypical lawyer. And I think when we use the phrase well-being, you do get a lot of contrasting traits of slowing down, taking time for yourself, like all of these things.
On my yoga mat.
Yeah. None of which, as I said to you before we started recording, tend to be useful when you're trying to record time on a billing sheet, which many of my colleagues have to do. I've been lost this last 12 months in all of these great documentaries on Netflix primarily. I love sporting documentaries, mm-hmm. and I love anything that shows me the insights of sports people and how they peak perform.
Yes.
And I got lost in one last year that I think is called It's about the NFL, and it's about the what's the key player of the NFL football team, Clarissa? Why can't I say it?
Brady?
Him? What is he? What's his position? This is terrible.
Oh, I don't know that. Gee.
The football, oh, my God, the actual quarterback. Oh, my gosh. The show is called The Quarterback, and it follows three or four of America's top quarterbacks in the NFL, which I'm no expert in whatsoever, but I just found the psychology of these gentlemen so fascinating, mm-hmm. and what they did and their routines and rituals to show up as, you know, peak athletes each week. And I took that and thought, so interesting how we accept that athletes need to go hard and then rest.
Yes.
But we don't accept that those of us in professions that by and large are in our heads should apply the same theory. And what I've learned from you is we should be applying the same theory.
Absolutely. And I love that you use that sport analogy. I often say we cannot outperform our human operating system. As humans, the harsh reality is we have some neurobiological constraints. We have to work with rather than against the way that we are designed to function as humans. And one of those, some might say unfortunate, others might say fortunate constraints, is that the part of our brain, it's called the prefrontal cortex, so it's the part of our brain that does the cognitively heavy lifting work. It hypothesizes, it solves problems, it's our working memory, it's our impulse control center. The harsh reality is that our prefrontal cortex only has around 4 to 6 hours of battery life per day.
Which is now, nuts.
It's nuts. Now, don't get me wrong, because I sometimes screw this information in keynotes and I get angry emails from people's HR departments and say, look, we're hearing whispers of four-day work weeks. Who are you to suggest that we now have a four-hour work day? That is not what I am saying. What I am saying is that for you, especially as lawyers, you are doing mentally demanding, cognitively taxing work. The harsh reality is you've got 4, possibly 6 hours total a day to really optimize that time. Now, I'm not suggesting that we constrain our days to 4 to 6 hours, because obviously part of your role would also entail some what Cal Newport talks about, shallow work, less demanding, less taxing, perhaps more administrative type tasks. But for you in your particular profession, chances are you need to be in that alert, focused state. So how do we optimize those 4 to 6 hours? A couple, are you happy for me to share a couple of?
Yes, go.
First and foremost, acknowledge that constraint. So don't consistently work 14-hour days. Yes, every now and then there's a case, there are extenuating circumstances, there is a reason, and you just have to do that. I acknowledge that. But if you are consistently doing that, the harsh reality is that your body will experience stress and you will end up being burnt out. You sort of can't, you know, find a productivity path that will work your way out of that. That's the inevitable reality. Some other really pragmatic things that you can do is our brain's never, ever been designed to work for long stretches of time. Now, I think most of us would agree we've certainly got shrinking attention spans. But what we do know is that we are designed to roughly work in a sort of 90-minute cadence. This is because our bodies have something called an ultradian rhythm. And this basically means that we go through sort of an energy peak for around roughly 90 minutes, and then we will inevitably have around a 20-minute trough. Then we go through sort of a 90-minute peak. This is also why we tend to sleep, ideally in sort of 90-minute cycles, give or take. Now, the idea is if we can structure our workday so we sprint and then we do something restorative. Now, if you're listening to me and saying, Christy, there is no way I can roll out my yoga mat and assume the downward dog for 20 minutes, I would never get any work done. That's not what I'm suggesting. You most certainly do need to do something restorative in that two to ten minutes is the ideal threshold. Now, the remainder of that 20-minute period could be doing some of your shallow tasks. It could be doing some more administrative, easier, less taxing types of tasks. But so long as you've got sort of that 2 to 10 minutes of downtime, and I hate to say it, checking your phone, triaging your inbox is not downtime.
Why not?
Sports report, not downtime. They're doing something for 2 to 10 minutes, and it can be as simple as some breathing exercises. It can be as simple as closing your eyes. It can be as simple as going to make a cup of tea. Anything that gets us moving, connecting with some sunlight will be restorative. So 2 to 10 minutes, then we can do something that's less taxing for the remaining 10 minutes, and then we can start to attack our next peak. Now, if we don't sort of adhere to a rough, and everyone's different, not everyone's strictly 90 minutes, some people are 70 minutes, some people very rarely go over 120, that's sort of the absolute maximum. But if you don't start doing something restorative during that downtime, the inevitable reality is that your next peak will be nowhere near as high, so you will be nowhere near as productive, and it will not last as long. So if we can start where possible, and it doesn't have to be all the time, I don't get, you know, live by a rigid 90-minute timer every day, but if we can start to sort of adhere to that cadence every now and then, you will find a profound result in terms of your productivity and your well-being. You're not going to get to the end of the day and flop on the couch feeling exhausted. Your output will be far greater because you're working the way your body and brain have been designed.
I love this. It's so interesting too, because in family law that I work in, something I'm on my sort of soapbox about at the moment is the way we run mediations in family law land. They are negotiations that tend to occur across a full day, often starting between 9 and 9.30 and often not finishing until 5.30, 6 p.m. Wow. Beyond. And I say, a brain science tells us that none of those human beings in that mediation after lunch are operating at full capacity. And the closer you get to the 8 p.m., the less likely it is that any person has a functioning prefrontal cortex, as my dear friend Anne-Marie Rice would say. And that's the moment where all the deals are being done. You know, this high-pressured environment of you must, here we are, there's 5% difference, this is a good deal for you, sign. And then we wonder why people are so dissatisfied the next day and we go home really grumpy. Yeah. And I really wish I could just change how mediations operated and they worked in smaller, almost 2-hour chunks across a period of time. And it fits with everything you're talking about. We need to be playing to our strengths of how do we get our brains functioning the best rather than this is how the system works, so we just keep doing it. Like, we know so much more right now. Why wouldn't we change some of this stuff? Anyway, that's my soapbox moment.
And can I add something to that? And this will give you, I'm adding more fuel to your fire here. The other reason that that's so problematic is that we know at nighttime the prefrontal cortex turns off because, as you just described, it is depleted, it is exhausted, it has run its race. What's really interesting, and this is why we know for children and teenagers, cyberbullying is so rife at nighttime, predatory behavior is rife at nighttime, because instead of the prefrontal cortex being in the driver's seat, The part of the brain that fires up at nighttime is called the amygdala. That is the emotional hub of the brain. So when I get an agreement or some terms presented to me and they are, you know, incongruent with what I was hoping for, I become uber aggressive. Again, you are creating a work environment that is so incompatible with how we are designed. So I probably didn't need to.
That's super helpful. No. It's so interesting because you see in, you know, Daniel Goleman's work and his language around the amygdala hijack, yes. You see that a lot used in business. And I use, you know, discussions around that human reaction, that fight, flight, fright response in these moments, and we all respond differently. But I've not heard, and so that's a really interesting piece of information, that biologically that part of the brain comes to life in that moment, and your connection with cyberbullying is fascinating because that's such a bigger problem, isn't it?
Yeah, and I often say to people, you know, we know most arguments in family households occur at night. I don't know about, but, you know, if my husband and I are going to kick off a disagreement or some sort of disparity, it tends to be at night. So what I found really helpful is to firstly touch my husband, even if it's just my arm on his forearm, and just hit him with oxytocin. Don't do this with your work colleagues. It is not.
Opens up a whole new framework of challenge.
Please don't do that. But with your close family members and friends, when you touch someone, their brain releases oxytocin. Oxytocin is the social bonding hormone. It is the love hormone. So I touch him very gently and I look at him and I say, honey, my prefrontal cortex is off. My amygdala is firing. Let's pick this up in the morning. And he's just so impressed with my very fancy vocabulary. Oxytocin that is warming his body, that he smiles and walks the other way. And the other.
Yeah, that's so wise.
Advice there.
What's the workplace equivalent, though, knowing that you can't do exactly as you've said? What would be the workplace equivalent in that moment where you might be conscious that your own behaviour has reached that amygdala hijack phase?
I think articulating that, I'm able to respond in a really logical fashion right now. I need some time to percolate on this and buying you that response time.
Yeah, naming it as you say, like I'm conscious that right now my brain feels like it's sitting in amygdala and it's not in prefrontal cortex. I might be wrong, but I'm just going to take a few moments. Yeah,
I think if anything, I mean, you'll diffuse the situation with your fancy vocabulary and your colleague will trying to figure out what on earth you're probably saying. But that will buy you some breathing time, hopefully, to formulate a solid response. Yeah. But I think just again, thinking and knowing, like I live by Maya Angelou's saying, when you know better, you do better. Mm-hmm. These insights about how our brain function aren't taught in schools. I've spent years reading and studying science. It's then about saying, well, how do we disseminate this? But more importantly, above all of that, how do we make this practical?
Yeah, how do you apply it in your day-to-day? I mean, I love it. I could listen to you for hours, which I'm not going to make people do with me today, but I might do in my own time. But today you do have a challenge for those that are involved, and it connects in, you used a great phrase before, again, I hit record, talking about rest, talking about daydreaming, and you had a fancy word for daydreaming. Can you tell me what that was?
Yeah. So when you pause, even if it's just for those 2 to 10 minutes, maybe it's longer than that, you activate in the brain something called the default mode network. It's a fancy word for daydreaming. Now,
default mode network. It's being written down. This is great.
DMN. The neuroscientists like just referring it to as the DMN. And I actually worked with a leader recently, and I talked to him through the science and the neuroscience behind why rest is imperative for our performance, not just as a nice well-being thing. Mm-hmm. And as I said before, I don't know about you, Clarissa, but I've never, ever had a genius idea or a solution to a complex problem land when I'm in my inbox or in an Excel spreadsheet. Yeah. My great ideas, my solutions to you know, really abstract complex problems come when I'm in the shower, when I'm going for a walk, when I'm swimming, when I'm in the ocean, when I'm on holidays with no Wi-Fi, or back in the good old-fashioned days on a plane with no Wi-Fi.
Yes.
And that's that default mode network. We're daydreaming. But if we think about our typical days now, we order our coffee, we pull out our phones, we sit at a red traffic light. Research tells us many of us still pick up our phones. We get in the lift, we pull up our phones. So we very rarely have pockets of what I call mind meandering. And so having white space, having time, even if it's just micro moments, small little moments between when you order your coffee and you wait, get in the lift and say, I'm not going to pull it out. Check your phone for the first 10 minutes of the bus ride home and then choose to have some mind wandering mode. But my challenge to your listeners today is that can you factor in even just 10 minutes where you do something completely unplugged? Is it going for a walk without your headphones in? Is it doing something, going to the bathroom without your phone? You know, research tells us 47% of people are toilet tweeters using their phones in the bathroom.
I love that stat. I remember you said that last year. I was like, well, that's awkward.
There's awkward looks always in the room when people put their head down. Just telltale sign straight away. It's just those pockets of time where you can intentionally unplug. So it's not about the detox. It's not about, you know, fully unplugging and aiming for inbox zero. It's just small little micro moments where you can be idle with your thoughts. Because when you rest, your brain has time for those ideas to germinate, but it also has time to restore. We are not machines. We're not designed to keep going. So part of this is reframing. Rest is not a reward. Rest is your.
I love that. So helpful. Great challenge.
And so I encourage your listeners, can you find those micro moments where you can be idle with your thoughts and just see what percolates. Don't go into that mind wandering mode and say, I'm going to factor this in. I didn't finish telling you that story of that leader. I shared that science with him and he fully recognized that this was an important part of his days and weeks. He was, however, too embarrassed to put daydreaming in his public calendar that his EA helped to manage. So he created a calendar event, a recurring event, and he made sure he fiercely protected it was 1 hour at least a week. And he just referred to it as activation of default mode network. Nobody really knew what it was except for him, but it was that calculation time. He wrote to me after 4 weeks of doing it and he admitted he dismissed it as something frivolous or unnecessary. He came up with a genius idea that he was presenting to his board that if it came to fruition, and we're yet to hear if it has, could potentially result in millions of dollars in terms of return on investment. That is an hour well spent, I would say.
And this was the question I asked you when you were talking to me about this idea. And as you know, I'm interested in exploring through the next sort of stage of my wellness research, not as much on the individual. That's where I've sat everything that we're talking about now. It makes sense. What I'm interested in is what's the connection to the organisation? Because this is, I think, where ultimately we'll get change in law. Dollars matter, money matters, all of these things. What's the connection? And you've just explained the connection in that beautiful example. Like at the end of the day, if we're not creating space for this level of creative thinking, we're never going to come up with new ideas. And organizations that allow this to happen will create cultures that enable innovation, different ways of solving problems, which generally means probably more money at the end of all of that, if that's your driver. So super cool. Can you tell me the Google story? Because I thought that was a wonderful example of this as well.
Yes. Yeah, so it is believed, and I don't think it's still in effect, but Google years ago used to have, I think it was roughly 20%. I need to check that number. But a dedicated period of your work week was allowed for you to come up with creative ideas. So to embrace a task or a process or a learning experience or a new hobby that was not in any way had to be directly related to your core function at Google. In that time, it is reported that that is where Gmail was conceived. So I would say that is a fairly worthwhile, again, return on investment.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we need to that's a sort of a more macro approach. Another thing we were talking about before we recorded, Clarissa, is talking about these strategies only are really effective in an organization if we see leaders walking the talk. We need leaders role modeling these healthy behaviors, not hiding, you know, the fact that they're going off to golf early in the afternoon or going to spend time with their aging parents or picking their kids up. Having those transparent conversations about what they're doing to rest and recharge, I think builds that culture naturally and, again, takes away the perception that it is something that is frivolous or unnecessary. Mm-hmm. Seeing it as this is a viable, intelligent thing for me to do in terms of my performance and my well-being.
Yeah, thank you. So helpful. Can you tell everyone because you have a wealth of resources. You've written a book. There are so many great downloadables. There are wonderful videos. Like there's data like I've never seen. So where is the best place for people to find all of that?
Oh, thank you. Well, my digital home is having a makeover at the moment, so we'll still rent, but my digital home is at drchristygoodwin.com, and I do try and share bite-sized bits of information on social media, predominantly on Instagram and LinkedIn. But, yeah, keeping people up to date with the latest trends and information and just sort of little micro-habits that they can embed into their days, so that you've got sort of the science-backed information, but you've got a practical application of it. My real mission is that people will thrive in this digitally saturated world we've all found ourselves in. So
you're doing a good job of it. Thank you so much for giving up your time and sharing like a small part of your incredible knowledge, but that small part is so useful to us. So thank you.
Thanks for having me.
So I said to you at the beginning, power of daydreaming. You know, I didn't give my guests any sort of, I want you to do this. I literally said, here's my hypothesis. This is what I'm doing with this challenge. And I'd welcome you bringing your expertise and a suggestion. And they each have. And so, of course, Christie's is default mode network, which is the fancy way of saying daydreaming. So if you need to be like her other very thoughtful client that popped in some time in their calendar and called it default mode network, then do that now before the day takes over. But I love this, and it is such a powerful reminder that our brains need rest as much as every other aspect of our being. And the constant digital inputs in law right now, I say, are one of the biggest drivers of stress, burnout, and ill health. The inability to slow down, because it comes at us now at such pace and from so many different platforms that we just, I think it's at times perceived wasteful to have those moments of nothing. And the nothing is something. So I mentioned in this interview, and I mentioned it as well with Tristan, that I've been swimming. I've returned to swimming. It's a childhood sport of mine. I love swimming. And I've heavily returned to swimming over the last 3 months. And the difference it's making to my productivity and how I feel, I can only say to you, it's extraordinary, and I will keep it as a result until it gets too cold and then I don't know what I'm going to do. But swimming I love, because it creates the space for what Christie's talking about, this default mode network, because your head's down, there's no sound, and you just get lost in that sort of space. Now, I appreciate not everyone has their swimmers with them at work today and can't just pop out, but if you can, do. If you can't, just find space today. Your challenge is to find space today for daydreaming. Without picking up a phone, without touching an inbox, without doing anything, like just create the space. And the extension of this challenge that I'd love you, if you've got the capacity in wherever you're working, to think through is, what if we built the space for daydreaming into how our organization operates, and what might come from that? That to me sounds like a fascinating 2024 project. But anyway, there's challenge number 4. Create some time today to daydream. And I suspect this challenge may not create the immediate result today, but I'd love you to give some thought to how you can get that space in to every day moving forward, and see what comes as a result.